This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable. Ladies and gentlemen, this is like a little bit of a reunion type podcast because I got my buddy from Colorado, Adam Parr, back on the podcast. And I feel like, just like many of my friends, life has separated us. And, you know, from work, kids, all that stuff. So, dude, I just want to say thank you very much for taking time out of your day to hop on the podcast and catch up with me.
Happy to do it, man. Yeah, no, it's been too long when you have kids and life gets busy and new things going on, man. I get it. But always glad to catch up with you, Dan. Looking forward to talking.
Yep. Are you well on your way to being a real estate mogul out in Colorado?
Well, that's what I tell everybody, but it's really just a front for my my OnlyFans page. So that's where the real money comes from. So, you know, it's been good business so far. No.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah, no, I'm happily self-employed now and really enjoying that and doing real estate, property management, and maintenance man. One day I'm, you know, picking out paint colors. Next, I'm knee deep in a sewer line, you know, fix underneath the house or something. So it's never a lack of fun and diversity, but I really enjoy it. It's fun.
Yep. So I believe the last time that I was in Colorado, I was able to hold this baby that was just, I mean, the tiniest thing. And so how old is your boy now?
Everett, he's four. He'll be five in August. And I think he's ready to hunt this year. He's been playing ton with my elk bugle and cow calls. And man, that boy's it's a running joke in my family of who's going to kill the first elk, either my brother, Phil, or Everett. And Everett's four. So our money actually is on Everett. I think he's going to kill the first elk. So we'll see. Yeah. But no, it's fun to watch him grow up, man, and follow in your footsteps and see him enjoy the outdoors and camping. And we did some turkey hunting this spring and just get out shed hunting. And we did a little archery hunting last fall, if you want to call it that. But it's just fun to get him out there, man. It's a totally different world now.
Is he able to ask you questions, like legit questions yet? Like, hey, Dad, tell me about – like, is he really into when you start talking about elk hunting?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, we watch a lot of YouTube and just to kind of see it more in action. But, oh, yeah, he asks the right questions and, you know, what does this do? And, you know, what sound is this, you know, different mews and different things like that and the calls. And it's just cool to see, man. And I don't try to force it on him. It's just, you know, when you're around it naturally and just I'm so into it that, of course, it's probably going to happen. But I would never push him to do that. But it's just cool that he is. You know, I'm really enjoying that.
Yeah, that's one thing that you've heard this, like everybody's heard the horror stories where it's like a dad who made them go hunting and made them do certain outdoor activities. And then they just were like, God, I don't like this. I hate it. Like, why are you making me sit in like below freezing temps or when it's wet outside or things like that? And right now I think I'm on a good path because my kids are like really starting to ask the questions. When can I go hunting with you? And I don't want to say I'm withholding it from them, but I am making sure that they are ready enough to enjoy the experience when I do take them out. And so at this time, it seems that I'm doing things right because they're asking a lot of questions. They want to come with me every time I go. And I'm really looking forward to like transitioning all of my stuff and energy to them, You know what I right. mean? So
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I think it's a fine balance that you want to you want to maintain, because you don't want to push them too hard, right? And then they kind of resent it or don't enjoy it. Or when Daddy took me out, we had to sit in the cold and I didn't have snacks for 3 hours. Or, you know, just you got to watch that is what I've been seeing. So it's just a new chapter. And, yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to the most. It's just like, you know, I've been around the gauntlet a few times. I've killed a pile of deer and a few elk, and it's – I'm ready to kind of take that next phase, and that's just seeing Everett do the same thing and bringing friends and family out and showing them. It's I get a more enjoyment out of that than, you know, doing it myself, honestly.
Absolutely. Well, I will say this, that when I came to Colorado, you were one hell of an elk guide. And thanks, man. If I would have had money back then, I would have definitely tipped you.
Hey, that invoice is still out there. It's probably just, we're gaining some interest here, Dan. I'll tally up the new total. I'll send it over.
Love it. Okay. So, man, I've been kind of busy myself. How have the last, I don't know, 4 years been as far as elk hunting in Colorado for you?
4 years. Well, I did a draw unit hunt back in 2021. Mm-hmm. And that was cool because that was right when I burned all my points, and that was right when, you know, pandemic was really kind of sitting in. That's when you really started to see the influx of hunting and just the pressure on these over the counter mm-hmm. units. And like when you came out, what was that? 2018, something like that.
Yeah. It was right before all that stuff broke out.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was 2018 and 19 when you came out. 2020, that's when kind of the floodgates started opening up, and it progressively seemed like it got worse and more hunting pressure throughout, you know, the years forward. So it was nice to actually hunt in a draw unit, good draw unit. Mm-hmm. And so I killed a nice bull on that hunt, 5x6, and nice. That was just a cool one, just because it was high elevation hunt. You know, killed him at 12,000 feet. He was way up at basically tree line when I killed him, so that was pretty special. 23, I was doing a lot of remodeling and building out a rental unit, so I actually didn't even archery hunt in 2022, I think. Okay. I don't know. The years kind of blend together. Last couple of years, I haven't hunted a ton of elk. Last season, I actually had probably my best season ever as far as hunting. I killed two elk. So I got one with a bow and then one with a rifle. But I've actually been kind of privileged the last couple of years. My cousin ended up buying a ranch with some partners. And so I've been hunting there for archery, which has been cool. And then I've got another neighbor in town who I've become good friends with. He bought a ranch, and so he lets me go out there and rifle hunt for a late season. So, you know, when you get older, when you don't have the time, like I used to be able to just get out and take the whole month, right, of archery, or hunt archery and then pick a rifle season. It was just – it's kind of tough on public land, especially over-the-counter units. So I've really kind of just enjoyed – getting that quality back a little bit and having a little bit of an edge with some private access. And it's not necessarily just hunting the private. It's sometimes just about the access that you get from the private to some of these public areas that make it kind of, you know, special and gives you that advantage. So yeah, that's how it's been. And just been doing a little bit of whitetail hunting here and there, different states, and still keeping at it. It's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, I will tell you this, man, some of the, like when we went up to that cabin, your buddy's cabin and we hunted out of that, man, that was like a dream come true for me. Yeah. Just like, you know, there was no electricity there, no running water. So you had, you got a bed at the end of the day. And the times that I came out there, man, I had so much fun, even though it was exhausting, like climbing that drainage all the way up to where they were at every single morning. Or going back, what was that time where it was me, you, and Ryan, and we were right. And then they came in behind us.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh man, that
caught us with our pants down that morning.
Exactly, exactly.
And yeah, so, lots of good memories.
And just the view, and the views, and most importantly, Taco Del Nar.
Right, dude, that gotta have that.
Gotta have Taco Del Nar. So
right.
So man, I gotta get out there again, but it's gonna become harder for residents, and that's why I am on here talking to you today. So recently, Colorado has just passed a new law that non-residents are not able to buy over-the-counter elk tags anymore. They are all draw. Like, non-residents are all draw units. Now, I don't know what that means as far as, you know, because South Dakota turned into a draw state for deer. And it's always been a draw, but you were guaranteed. Now, states like Nebraska, South Dakota, it's getting harder to get these get these tags for non-residents. What is the vibe of elk hunting in Colorado from a resident's perspective right now?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I can't speak for everybody, but I mean, my own personal experiences, like I mentioned, you know, since the pandemic, that 2020 time period, I mean, it's been a significant increase in hunting pressure. I remember when I went out in 2020, I don't even think I was hunting. I just took Everett up and I just wanted to go out in the mountains. I mean, he was real little at that point. I mean, I think he was only like a year and a half old. And I just took him up just to drive into some of these areas where I'd never hunted, but just kind of wanted to check it out. And I talked to some guys on the road and camps and things like that. And majority of them were from out of state, non-residents, and in fact some of them that year, you know, like Canada had closed down their borders, so they weren't doing any hunting. So actually a few people I talked to that day actually were moose hunting or had moose trips booked for Canada, and then kind of last minute they were like, oh well, what state can we go to that's close and, you know, has over-the-counter opportunities? And Colorado for a lot of people is that option. So it seems like it really has increased. Like we talked about the cabins when you used to come out and hunt. I mean, on any given kind of week during archery season, let's say, that's what I'm most familiar with, there might be one or two camps kind of below the cabins there, like on some of those county roads, as far as like people hunting. In 2021, I believe, 2021, there were 17 different camps just on that little stretch of road. And there's really not that.
No shit.
Yeah. Yeah. There's really not that, like, it's not a long stretch of road. I mean, there's only a few miles of road there in that section of the National Forest. So to have that many people with camps, and then you're not even factoring in maybe people that are driving in for the day, or people that you just don't see, you know, set up. They might drive in on their four-wheelers or drive in on their trucks, and, you know, but these are 17 different camps between, you know, that little section there, and that's a huge increase from just a few years prior. So, I mean, if that gives you – that's just what I know from my little area of hunting and doing the cabin rentals and things there. If that doesn't kind of paint a picture, I mean, I can't speak for the whole state or different units or whatnot, but that's a very significant increase. I'm not a mathematician, but that's we're in the thousands of percent increases as far as, you know, activity.
Yeah. Well, and then you multiply that across the state. And I mentioned this earlier in another podcast, where I said, I feel like we're going to start experiencing a resident revolution, meaning the experiences that residents are taking away from their state, and I'm going to say public land specifically, are decreasing from, like, what is your idea of a good hunt, right?
Right.
And the residents, because they're there all the time, and they're the ones who have the shortest distance to drive and things like that. So they're able to hunt more on these pieces of public. Now, don't get me wrong. Public land is for anybody and everybody. Okay. But when your experience, it's like, oh man, I used to see deer here all the time. Now I'm seeing less deer and more people. And then they start to, you know, oh, I had a guy from out of state bump me, or you're going into a trailhead, or you're going into a parking lot, and it's just like four or five cars in there from different states. I think it's easy for guys to point the finger and say, these are the people who are ruining my experience. Okay. Take that however right. you want to take it. So usually when there's a law change like that, it's because there's been some bitching and complaining about certain things. Did you feel that?
Did I bitch and complain?
say that again.
So did I bitch and complain to the CPW out here? Like, yeah. I mean, people like Dan Johnson.
No, but in all seriousness, man, usually the residents, they start bitching, and then now we've started to see these specific law changes in states. Were you hearing from the locals out in the areas that you hunted, like, Jesus, man, there's non-residents all over the place. It's pissing me off.
Yeah. I mean, some of my neighbors that hunt, and just buddies that, you know, in my little neighborhood here that, mm-hmm. that hunt, yeah, it's kind of all the same thing. And not necessarily that we like oppose it, because like I know where all this comes from. It all boils down to a dollar, you know, and the, yep. the money generated. And, you know, in a lot of ways, I welcome the non-residents, because I mean, they're what's an elk tag now in Colorado, like $800 for an yep. over-the-counter, whether it's rifle or archery. I mean, that's a huge chunk of change. And, you know, that directly benefits conservation and wildlife. And so you can't, yep. you can't like knock that. And I do my fair share of non-resident hunting and, you know, yep. other states. Mm-hmm. You know, I've hunted in your state, Iowa. I've hunted Kansas a number of times. And so, you know, you hear that sentiment kind of across the board. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely me personally. I've just over the last 4 years, I personally don't even really enjoy to go out in an over the counter unit anymore, just because I know the quality of my hunt has declined so much that
yeah.
I almost go out with the expectation that I'm not even going to see anything, let alone have an opportunity to kill something. And that's not why I do it or necessarily expect that every time. But, you know, when you're out over the course of a week or maybe let's say 3 days for a weekend hunt, like I would be hopeful that I would have some sort of encounter, right? Or maybe a shot opportunity. Maybe I don't, but maybe it was close, whatever, you know, stuff that we experienced while you were out hunting. Mm-hmm. Anymore, it's few and far between. And I've gotten to the point myself personally where I would just rather save up for a draw unit, you know, maybe not a high point unit, maybe burn one or two points or something, you know, yeah. but just eliminate that pressure. And, yeah. you know, because, and, you know, let's say a unit gives out 200 archery tags or 500, you know, or 1,000 even, I mean, there could be, so that's 1,000 tags unit wide, right? And that's yeah. that's a huge, you know, acreage. That's millions of acres, let's say, for a unit. But when you talk about an over-the-counter unit, there could be 1,000 people in any given like little area potentially throughout an entire month of archery season, you know,
yeah.
Within maybe like a 20-mile stretch. I don't know. I don't have the data, but you at least know it's kind of like capped at a certain point. And yep. you can kind of, it's just one less variable to your hunt to make it more quality. I've just become under the notion that I would rather wait, even in my own state, I would rather wait 2 or 3 years to hunt somewhere and have a more enjoyable hunt than go hunt over the counter. And in the meantime, I'll go do other hunts, you know, maybe I'll do a mule deer hunt or or maybe just not archery hunt that year and just do a whitetail hunt in a different state. You know, so the notion I'm getting from people I talk to and my own personal experiences is really they just want the quality experience back. And right. it's hard to get that when there are just a lot of guys out there hunting and you're running into people constantly. No one has fun, and eventually people will stop coming here, right? And then you have that effect of, okay, well, if people just think Colorado's complete shit and all, I never see an elk, I never get an opportunity, well, then they're probably not going to spend their money here anyways. They're probably going to wait either for a draw unit like I'm doing, or they're going to go to a different state and do a draw unit there, or maybe another over-the-counter opportunity. So it's kind of a vicious circle, and it's a fine balance that you got to really watch. So, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's just it's just archery they're talking about, right?
So I didn't read up 100% on that. All I know is that the title of this article that I just skimmed through was like, non-residents, have to draw units now.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. From what I've read, I'm trying to find something. I don't think Colorado Parks and Wildlife has put out an official statement yet. So I've looked on their website all over. I can't find an actual article. I've just seen what other, like bowhunter.com or whatever, posted an article on it. And what they're referencing specifically is just archery.
Yes.
From the statistics that were posted, they're saying that rifle seasons have, or rifle tags have actually declined over the last 20 years. Whereas archery has actually increased in popularity. So they're selling more archery tags. And then there's like the factor of interference, you know, like rifle seasons, they're done breeding, they're done, you know, doing their thing. Whereas archery season, all that pressure does have an direct, you know, effect potentially, or does have an effect on the breeding season, you know, taking place right during the middle of archery. So I think that's kind of the factors there, why they potentially are doing it. But I believe it's just archery. Did you find an article?
All right, guys, you know me, and I love eating wild game, but I don't eat wild game every single night. Every once in a while, I'll reach for a side of beef, and that's why I trust Omaha Steaks. Because Omaha Steaks are sent directly to my door, I can keep my freezer stocked without having to go to the grocery store. It's honestly like having a trusted butcher and gourmet food shop right at your house. Last week, I pulled out their pure ground ribeye burgers for a quick grill session. The flavor and marbling was unreal, rich, juicy, and miles ahead of any average grocery store meat. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. I've been trying Underbrush from Nathan and Sons, and it's not really regular gum. It's remineralizing chewing gum. Basically an oral care routine in gum form. You brush in the morning and at night, but after lunch, there's a big gap where most of us do nothing for our teeth. Underbrush is made for that moment. Chew it for 5 to 10 minutes, spit it out, and move on. Or keep chewing it if you like the feel of it. It's made with something called hydroxyapatite. That's the same mineral your enamel is made from, and natural saps like mastic and spruce. So it has a firmer, really satisfying chew. The company is only a few years old, and the team is literally making, packing, and shipping gum every day. So if you want a simple daily upgrade for your teeth, check out Underbrush from Nathan & Sons. Check them out today at nathanandsons.com.
Yes, I did. The article says, here's the title of it. This is the source is Outdoor Life. Colorado eliminates over-the-counter archery elk tags for non-residents. After complaints of overcrowding and more non-residents bow hunting elk than residents, the Colorado Parks and Wildlife Commission overwhelmingly voted to restrict out-of-state elk tags. Out of state elk tags, it looks like. Okay. And then it gets into all the statistics. So the full article is on outdoorlife.com, but it's just archery tags. And like many of these states now that are going there, we're starting to see residents start to bitch and complain that there is, which blows my mind a little bit, because correct me if I'm wrong, Colorado has a ton of public land.
Ton of public land, and we have the largest elk herd. I think it's like 250,000 elk, something like that.
Yep. I mean, it's huge. And so what's crazy is that even like this very large amount of public land has become, from a resident's perspective, overrun by non-residents every single hunting season. And man, I completely understand where these people are coming, like where residents are coming from. Now, I don't know if my thoughts on this are right or wrong, but I feel that if you live in a state, you should have the priority over a non-resident coming into that. Now, I don't necessarily know what that means. All I know is that, like, you have the voice in your state where you live and you pay your taxes, right?
Right.
Over the fact that, yes, a Colorado elk tag for a non-resident may be $800 or more, whatever the case is. Yeah, you're going to spend gas money getting there. You're going to buy food. You're going to stimulate the economy in some way, shape, or form. But that pales in comparison to all of the ways that a resident provides to their economy in that. So yes, you're paying a higher elk tag, but guess what a resident is doing? They're spending gas and rent and mortgage and all that money all year round in that state.
Right.
And so I really do feel, I don't care what the scenario is, like I support residents wanting to change their laws to make their experiences better. Right. If you want, like, why do so many people go and move to Iowa? Like
right.
for white
quality. It's the best
quality. Yeah. The quality of the hunt. And we have all of that under control. And so, and that's why it takes 5 years in the best parts to 6 years to the best parts in Iowa to get an archery tag. So man, I'm just a huge advocate for resident, you know, and if that means I have to wait, it's what people don't understand. And I want to hear your thoughts on this as well, is it's just when you do get to go hunt Colorado, or you do get to go hunt a non-resident tag in another state, it's just going to make that experience better for not only the resident, but for the non-resident as well. That's my thought process.
Yeah, no, I'm 100% on the same page. I've been thinking that for years since I've noticed the increase in traffic, hence why I would rather hunt a draw unit or at least mm-hmm. wait, you know. I'm all about that quality. I've only got limited time throughout the year now. It's not like I can spend that whole month like I used to. So it's like, if I'm going to actually take that week off and go after it, I want to at least have a good sense that it will be a quality hunt. You know, and I'm willing to wait for that, and I'm willing to pay for it too.
Yep.
You know, I mean, they have increased prices for resident. I think the archery tag is like $60 now, but I mean, even if let's say it was $100, like I'm still going to go. I would gladly pay $100 to go hunt an elk each year. I mean, yeah, is that maybe a little steep? I don't know, but if that's what it takes to help increase the quality and the experience. You know, and I think about like my son Everett when he starts out hunting, and let's say we're doing an over the counter. It's like I don't want him to get discouraged that we haven't seen an elk all week, and we've been grinding it out and getting up early and getting after it. And mm-hmm. for some, that's what happens. You don't even see an elk, and it's all about that quality over quantity and that balance of funds and, you know, the tag license sales and just trying to appease everybody, and it's not an easy solution, but I do think it is the right move for Colorado, because it has gotten out of hand in my opinion, and it's just not enjoyable for a lot of people. And so we'll see where it goes. I'm not sure what they've how that's gonna really roll out, like if it's gonna be more like a limited or like a cap on certain, you know, like let's say for a unit, they're going to have a certain amount of tags available, and it's kind of more of like a first comes first serve basis, something like that. Or if it's just going to be like, you know, points get involved. I wouldn't imagine it's going to take points to draw these units going forward. Maybe you'll draw them second or third choice, or, you know, pick them up on the leftover or the secondary draw, something like that. But, whatever it entails, it's definitely going to cut down on the people coming here and, you know, probably prevent a lot of that last minute stuff. Like, oh, I didn't draw here. So, okay, we can always go to Colorado. That's always the fail safe. Or this didn't work out, or I had a week pop open. What can we go do? Or I'm in this state and, you know, Colorado's close by. We can go hunt there. You know, and maybe it's probably going to crack down a lot on like just unit bouncing, right? Like, because there's a lot of people that come out, and I was watching a YouTube video the other day of a guy, and he went to like three or four different units in the state, and you can do that right now because there are so many over the counter units. You don't have to pick a specific unit. So I think it's just going to help in a number of ways. I still think there's going to be a lot of opportunities to hunt in Colorado. I don't think they're going to completely close that down. And I think there's still, it's just going to force people, I think, to kind of like pick and choose and kind of prepare a little bit more in advance instead of like last minute. Oh, we're just going to go to Colorado. So I don't know. We'll see.
Yep. Okay. So I'm pulling up a graph right here. And the cool thing about this graph, okay, is right around 2005, to I'm going to say between 2005 and 2007 ish, the number of resident and non-residents were exactly the same. Okay, for Colorado. Then, so this is over the counter archery elk license sales by residency, 2001 to 2023. So we're right around 2007. It was completely equal. Then actually residents all the way up until 2000 and I'm going to say 17 outpaced. There was a dip by non-residents from 2007 to about 2012. And then that's somewhere around 2012 is when more non-residents started. And then 2015, residents started to drop while non-residents started to increase more.
Oh, wow.
And then, yeah. And so then in 2020 was an equal point where they started to, where they were equal again, in 2020 with residents trending down and non-residents trending up with about roughly the same number of license sales for both. Okay, now here's what kind of is funny to me. Since 2021, both license sales have trended down, right? So it's funny to me when, because on this graph it shows residents, non-residents, and then the total graph. So since 2019 which was the peak of license sales in the state of Colorado for non-resident over the county archery tags, everything's been trending down. So now, so it's almost like a delayed response, right? So people have been frustrated for a while now, but now we're seeing a big trend down by probably 5,000 to 7,000 total license sales over the course, if any of this is making sense. And so the trend is going down as far as the number of licenses that are being sold every year. But it's funny how now they're taking they're changing it. When it, like, to me it looks like it should have been changed somewhere around 2019.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's like you don't know you're in a recession till, you know, after the fact, right? It's probably one of those things where you can't really make a decision at that time. You kind of got to let the trends play out over the years. Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, from the articles I saw, they stated that there was over a 20-year trend, you know, that there was a really I don't know how much of an increase, but there were an increase of archery licenses sold I think both resident and non-resident, whereas like rifle is not. And, mm-hmm. you know, with the other factors at play, like the rut and yep. things like that. That's interesting, though. I could also see like maybe other factors at play, like, you know, maybe there's less people out there hunting, but we've just gotten a lot more efficient at being in the backcountry.
Yeah.
You can stay out there longer. You got a lot more like work remote, you know, now where people yep. have a lot more flexibility with their jobs or time off. And, you know, so maybe they're just spending more time in the field, whereas previously they weren't or couldn't. So there might be some other factors that play like that, that, you know, just even though licenses are down as far as sales numbers, there could be just people are out there doing it more. And with social media and videos, the popularity has grown so much that people are just out there getting after it. So
yeah,
maybe it's something like that.
Yeah. And so from a revenue standpoint, here's a blurb from this article. Colorado Parks and Wildlife guessed that limiting non-resident over-the-counter elk archery licenses by 10% would reduce its revenue by almost $2 million. Cutting them by 25% would reduce revenue by more than $6 million. Okay.
Wow.
But they said that's really because they can't accurately predict like the response that hunters, non-resident hunters are going to have to this change, what that's going to, so they really can't accurately determine what the revenue loss will be. But this is where I have my own thoughts about Iowa, right? And I know a lot of it depends on income. And you know, like I feel like hunting is, especially in Iowa where there's limited access. Like it in certain states like that, like Iowa, it is slowly becoming, you know, what some people might say is a rich man's sport. However, I pay $28.50 for one of the most coveted whitetail deer buck tags, archery tags, in the entire United States. For me, I look at that and I go, man, I feel like I should be paying more for that tag as a resident, especially if I am also saying I want to limit the amount of non-residents that can come into my state and hunt, and some other rules and regulations. So how much are you paying for an elk tag in Colorado right now? And a resident archery tag, how much are you paying for that?
Yeah, I think it's like somewhere around $60, maybe 62. I think it used to be like 50 just a few years ago.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's went up a little bit, but I'm in the same boat. Like, I think if it was 100, I'd still go. If it was 200, I'd probably still go, you know? I mean,
yeah.
And to your point, I mean, I applied for Iowa this fall. I thought yep. for sure we were going to get it. We had 5 points and didn't draw. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I'm going to have over $1,000 into Iowa before I even show up. I mean, yep. when the preference points are like 60 some bucks now, and you got six of those, mm-hmm. and the tag is what, like $600 or something like that. I mean, you're over yep. a grand before you even step foot in the state. So, I do think that there will have to be some sort of like, you know, moving that gap a little closer yeah. together to make up for that revenue loss, because there will be some of that, and that might take a few years to shake out and see what the data, you know, holds. But I think there will be, that means an increase, and I think most people would be for it. I mean, if you really enjoy hunting and if you really enjoy archery season, mm-hmm. you'll pay that extra $40 or $20 or whatever it is, you know,
yep.
in the name of, you know, increasing the quality, and then, you know, the money staying the same for conservation and keeping this thing going that we all love.
Yep. So. Yep, absolutely. And that's the same thing. Like, I think there is a sacrifice that needs to be had by somebody. Whenever you make a change, there's sacrifice. Someone is going to sacrifice. And so I feel like if you are very vocal about keeping non-residents out of your state, or because ultimately that's what's happening, right? It's like, we want to reduce the number of non-residents coming to our state so that the resident can have a better hunting experience. So if you want a better hunting experience, I feel, this is my thoughts, is that maybe you should buck up on the revenue side and pay more for that experience.
Right.
Right. I mean, that's usually how it works. If you want to live in a nicer house, you got to pay more money for a nicer house. If you want to go on a better vacation, you got to pay more money for a better vacation. And I know now it's a little like that may sound insensitive because, you know, we're talking about a natural resource here and an activity that is supposed to be for everyone, no matter what your income level is. But man, $28 for an Iowa buck tag for a resident, that just seems dirt cheap to me.
Yeah. When I have to pay $1,000, you know, exactly, to hunt that same area, it just seems like it'd be maybe a little more to bring that, mm-hmm, that gap together. Yeah. No, yeah. I agree. There's gotta be a give somewhere. And fortunately, unfortunately, it all boils down to the almighty dollar. And yeah, that's what keeps all this rolling, whether you like it or not. Those dollars need to be there in order to fund what we do and, yeah, you know, protect that wildlife and, yeah, and keep it growing, you know, for years to come.
Let me ask you a question. And this is about the guy, like I always run into a handful of these guys. I don't consider myself a meat hunter. However, I do use the meat from the deer that I cook it and I consume it. Do you think it's fair, like in today's world, when someone says, hey man, I use, I don't want you to raise the price on me because it's raising the price on my food bill every year. And then I look at that and I'm like, okay, you can get 60 pounds of meat off of I'm just going to guess 60 pounds of meat off of a deer in Iowa, depending on how big they are, maybe a little less, 40 to 60 pounds. Big bucks get you more. But then you take that divided by the price of the tag.
$28.
Yeah, $28.
Dude, 50 cents a pound.
Exactly. Something like that. And so, and then in Colorado, it's probably something similar, like on a cow elk, on a medium-sized cow elk, how many pounds of meat are you pulling off of it?
Yeah, like medium size, anywhere from like 150 to 180. You know, you shoot a big cow, you're over two. And a big bull, you can be north of that for sure. Yeah. So depending on how you process it and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, it's a very nominal like increase, you know, when you factor mm-hmm. that in for food. But you know, mm-hmm. that will be a complaint, I'm sure. I mean, as far as, you know, that potentially, you know, increasing the tag costs and everything. So I mean, I get it. I mean, not everyone's in the same situation and, you know, they do it strictly for meat. But yeah, I mean, unfortunately, what hasn't gone up in the last, you know, four right. years? I mean, everything has gone up and you know, that's the state we live in right now. We'll see where it ends or where it tops out, but there's got to be a push and pull to everything.
Yeah, that would be one survey that I would be very interested in listening to. The percentage of residents that would want, like, hey, listen, I'm willing to pay more for my elk tag, or I'm willing to pay more for whatever tag it is. Like up into a certain point, like would you be willing to pay $50 for a deer tag in Iowa for a archery tag or a shotgun tag or something like that? Would you be willing to do that? And just see, like, I don't feel like it would change that much. Like, especially in any sex tag, like you keep, if you're serious about meat hunting, then we can keep the doe tags exactly where they're at. But if you also want to shoot that big buck, then maybe that should be because why do people come to Iowa for big antlers?
For that big deer. Yeah,
exactly.
For sure.
Like why do I do what I do in Iowa for big mature bucks? Right. And so I don't know. I would love to just to gather more information from residents of the state of Iowa or Colorado or wherever, and just try to figure out, like, how much more are you willing to pay to keep the same experience, or for Colorado in this case, to now change the experience potentially for non-residents.
Right.
So I don't know.
Right.
Just something I've been thinking about lately.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's a lot of pieces to it. I mean, I've seen even units, you know, where over the last 3, 4, or 5 years where the unit itself, it's over the counter, but you can only hunt that one unit. Right. Like you can't just bounce around to every unit in the that's over the counter in the state. And there's like, I don't know, 30 or 40 or there's a lot. So, you know, even myself as a resident, I would be willing to just, okay, pick your unit. Right. Mm-hmm. And just hunt there. And that might, you know, I don't know how much people bounce around. I mean, I hunt maybe 2 or 3 different units in my little area down here that are over the counter. And that might help too, you know, in the future, if there still is maybe a problem with where people feel like there is, you know, an overcrowding or the quality's not there. Like there's solutions to how, you know, we can go about it or how it shakes out. But, there's a lot to it. Unfortunately, it's not an easy solution, there's a number of things at stake here.
Yeah, for sure. Cause I definitely feel like a hypocrite when I say things like, yeah, hunting is becoming a rich man's sport, but then also talking out of the other side of my mouth saying, you know, residents should pay more money for their tags. Right? Yeah. And so I don't know.
Right.
You know, that's in Iowa for a deer tag. Now $60 for a bull tag, for an archery tag, like that just seems kind of very affordable to me. I don't want to say cheap, but affordable.
Yeah.
But then again, like Iowa is way easier to hunt than Colorado.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So, I got to spend $100 and then I have to go hike to 12,000 feet because there's so much pressure. Like, I can't compare those two experiences.
Right. Yeah. No, it's a little different, but yeah, like even what I stated earlier, like me personally, I can't speak for everybody else. Like, I'm at the point or was at the point where I'm willing to take a couple years off and not even hunt these over the counter units in my own state, in my own backyard, to have that better quality experience and just wait for a draw unit. Yeah. I mean, that's what it boils down to for me. I want that quality hunt. And I think a lot of people feel the same way. And so if I'm at the point where I don't even care to hunt in my own, you know, little area here where I live, if that paints a picture in itself. I mean, I'm willing to sacrifice actually my hunting time and go do something else, or, you know, hunt a different species or go to a different state, or I'm still going to hunt, you know, but it's not going to be in my own backyard. Because I want that quality experience. I want to see elk. I want to have that opportunity. I don't want to run into people all the time. And I'm not opposed to that. I mean, we need the money, right?
Yep.
So, I expect to see people. I also expect to see elk or have some opportunities.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's trending, you know, a lot harder. You know, I used to be like, I could vouch and, you know, hey Dan, come out and hunt, man. It's a blast. And that's how it was. I mean, it was actually pretty good experience. You have those opportunities, but since 2020, 21, I can't even recommend and vouch and tell my friends or my brother to really spend the money and come out here anymore. Cause it's just, I personally don't think it's worth it. Save up for your draw tag and hunt here in 5 years or something, or get a draw tag that only is a couple points, and at least you kind of limit that experience. That's just my opinion though.
What year did you move out to Colorado?
2015. So I'm coming up on a decade. I didn't hunt that first year cause I got out in June and I had a Kansas or something tag that fall. And so I just wasn't ready to hunt. Plus I'd still be paying the non-resident prices back then. So I actually didn't hunt that first year. So my first year hunting was 16.
Gotcha. Okay. So, 16, was that like a really good year for you as far as the experience? I know it was like one of your first years as a resident in Colorado, but were you seeing elk like before, like those years before the pandemic, before like when, even when I was coming out in 18, 19, was the experience there those years?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah, 100%. I mean, it was damn good hunting. I mean, I felt confident that every time I went out, I would at least see something. I don't know if I'd have a opportunity, but if you just pick a week, I mean, that first week that I ever really hunted, I wounded one on the third day, and then I ended up killing that big 6x7 on the last day, on the fifth day. Yeah. And I mean, that's kind of unheard of now. I mean,
yeah,
17 was, I didn't kill nothing in 17, but I tell everybody about that year. It was like the best year you could ever had without actually killing something. I mean, I had so many opportunities. I missed bulls. I was full draw on a couple different bulls, you know, over this is over the course of the whole month, you know, hunting 2 or 3 days, and then I'd take a week off and do it. But I mean, it was just those experiences were magical, and you didn't really have to worry about, I ran into people on like the road and the trailhead, but not in the, once you were off away from the road, like you didn't see anybody, like there was no one around. I mean, you can vouch for that even in 2018. I mean, I don't really remember us even running into anybody while we're, other than being on the road, but I mean, the didn't run into anybody in the backcountry.
No, hunting. I can't remember running into any other hunters in Colorado. I mean, even that one guy who was camping on the road, he was just camping. He wasn't, hunting. So, I think on that road, right before it came private, there was a group, but I never saw them. I just saw the cars.
Right. Yeah. There's always one or two camps in there, or used to be. And, 2018 was another good year when you guys came out. 19, I didn't do a lot of hunting in 19 just because Everett was born and, you know, new dad responsibilities there. But, I mean, and then it's just like, it wasn't 0 to 60 in just 2020, but like 2020 was a big jump. And then you're like, okay, maybe it'll shake out a little bit and things will go back to normal. And then 2021, it felt like there was another big jump of just pressure and people. And then, you know, the popularity of, you know, with the pandemic, everybody again had more time. They wanted to be outdoors. You couldn't do different things. And then, you know, then there's this whole movement of knowing where your meat comes from and things like that. And then, you know, social media and just, the internet, just, you know, we've become better hunters and more efficient. So there's just, you factor all that together and you can kind of see why there has to be some sort of change or limit on this stuff. So it makes sense to me.
Absolutely. Yep. I get it 100%, man. Well, great conversation, Adam, man. I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to do this. Give your boy,
anytime, brother.
Give your boy a high four from me. And, and I
use
will
the other hand.
Yeah, exactly. I hope I'm out to Colorado again sometime. Even if it's just for a vacation, we've got to meet up and go do another steak dinner somewhere.
Yeah. You're welcome anytime, man. Come back out. We'll get you on some elk. We'll get you that first elk. We'll try hard, and maybe it'll get a little easier here in the next couple of years. If they do limit some of this stuff. We'll see.
maybe. All right, man. Hey, I appreciate your time.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Dan.